Blog Talk Radio.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.
King Street. I'm your host, King. Welcome to the show. I'm excited today. This is a great Wednesday, everyone. And I'm praying that everybody's family and themselves are safe and practicing all the CDC required suggestions on how to stay safe from the coronavirus. Hopefully everyone is following that and everyone is safe in their homes. And this is going to be starting our new King Street series. This will be the first launch. I'm excited to have a gentleman who I've known for some years now, who I've worked with in real estate. We work together in business, and we have actually a friendship throughout the years, but I consider to be a very knowledgeable person as it comes to real estate investing, real estate industry news and information in general. So I'm happy and excited to have Mr. Andre Smith join us on King Street today. How you feeling today, Mr. Smith?
Hey, I'm excellent, King. Glad to be here and excited about having a discussion about one of my favorite topics, which is real estate.
Absolutely, absolutely. So just to let our listening audience know a little bit about you, Andre P. Smith is the founder and managing partner of the Velocity Group, LLC, which was formed to provide customized real estate development, brokerage, asset management, and investment services for institutional commercial clients in Washington, D.C. and the Baltimore metropolitan regions. Andre has successfully negotiated hundreds of real estate transactions, which have included industrial, retail, office, and other various income-producing properties. He has a special interest in land investment, site selection, mixed-use development, and multifamily properties. Andre has received a number of sales awards and industry designations and has conducted professional training for regional and national real estate brokerages and associations. So I just want to give everybody a brief summary of the brother's bio. His full bio will be available on the website. But now that we've gotten that out of the way, how are you doing, Mr. Smith, you and your family, during this pandemic that we're undergoing right now?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking, King. That's kind of our new normal, right? So we start all conversations with, you know, the most important is how's the family, you know, how's your mental space and how you've been. So, you know, thanks for asking. The family as well. We probably started about a week earlier than everyone else, so we've been kind of sequestered. Now I think this is going on our fourth week. So it's been a productive time, a lot of time of reflection, and so yeah, we just thank God, you know, for the time and that our family, He's extended grace to. So none of us have suffered, you know, with the illness during the time, and we just pray for all the families who have been affected and the frontline people. Who still have to go out and serve, even when their families may be needing them. So for sure, thanks for asking.
Absolutely, brother. Glad to hear that you are doing well and the family is safe and that you're in good spirits and in good health. You know, I'm always a person who believes that we start off every conversation, every show, every meeting with moments of gratitude, and I don't want to stray away from that on this particular show. So just like I say, I'm grateful for my life, my health, the ability to see, hear, walk, talk, stand, breathe, and have a sound mind. Thankful for the love and support of my friends and family members, and another 24 hours, another day to pursue my opportunity and my purpose in life. And before we begin our questioning, Mr. Smith, I'm going to give you an opportunity, I should say, to, you know, share your gratitude moment as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, King. And I guess, equally to what you said, I'm just thankful and just grateful, that I, just have another day, just have another day to get it right. Every day is a blessing. Every day is an opportunity to improve, upon your impact, right? Because it's not about us. It's about the people's lives that we're fortunate enough to touch and hopefully improve. And so I'm thankful that I get a chance to do that again today.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, which I feel is definitely needed in today's environment, needed anyway, but definitely much more pressing now with the uncertainty that looms over us every single day. But now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's dive deep into some discussions about real estate. Now, one of the first questions I want to ask you, and this may seem like an obvious question, but I just want to get your perspective on it because I think it really depends on this answer depends on how a person perceives and operates under their definition of what this to this question or the answer to this question. So with that being said, how do you define real estate investing?
So that's a great question, King. And I mean, you can go to a number of different sources and probably not come away with the same answer. But I like to just create baselines and work from a simplistic perspective, right? And so I consider real estate investment just being acquiring real property. In this case, real estate, that's what it is. The legal definition is real property, with the goal of receiving a return on investment. So that's real simple. Just acquiring real property with the goal of receiving a return on investment. And with that definition, most people don't realize it, but most of us are investors. And so that's why I like to make things simple and not overcomplicated, because people who have a primary residence, they bought that property with the hope and desire and a goal at some point to receive a return on the investment. And so that's no different than people who are doing it as a business or who have multiple properties looking for a return on investment. And so I look at that in that way, is that all of us in some form, shape, or fashion, not all, but most of us, are looking for a return on investment on real estate we bought, whether we're living in the property or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I like how you define that, and put in that context that we all are making, if we are homeowners, we're making an investment into that. I, as you know, within the roundtable, that's one of the things we like to focus on is getting people who come in our program to understand the importance of seeing home ownership as the initial investment and approaching it in that context. And when you do it, as you know, as being a business entrepreneur yourself, that you view finances differently when you're an entrepreneur than you do when you're a worker. And you view home ownership differently or ownership of property or real property differently when you put on the investor hat as opposed to just looking at it as a place to live in. So I think those are important distinctions in there.
Absolutely.
So let's get started with let's move on, I should say, with so what got you started in the real estate industry?
Yeah, so great question, King. I mean, I had always, even as a young child, I had always been fascinated with buildings, right? Just houses and structures and just how they all kind of look differently and had their own unique design and layout. So even as a young child, that was something that I was fascinated with. I didn't even know about architect or engineering or construction, really, for that matter, to be perfectly honest with you. I just like the uniqueness of houses. And that was something that I even thought, moving on to college, something that I thought I would study until one of those first math classes, right? And thought I wanted to do drafting and become an engineer or designer, and said, okay. Maybe there's more for me outside of this field, but I got into the legal field, King, out of college, and that kind of reinvigorated that passion and that desire that I have for real estate. And so through that, I studied real estate law and business law and mergers and acquisition and litigation and all of that kind of relit the fire inside of me for properties and how important real estate was in the overall economy. And so it was probably, you know, through my legal work that got me reengaged. And shortly after that, I decided to make it a career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now that you've made it a career and this is your full-time business and this is what you do every day to bring in revenue for you and your family, how do you see this pandemic, or how is this pandemic conducting your business in this pandemic?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, I mean, I'll say that, you know, I've been doing it full-time for 20 years now. So it's been my sole source of income and the way that I provide it for my family. And so I've done it as an investor, rehabbing, buying, purchasing, flipping properties, as well as a broker. So employing agents to work with the, under my direction and brokerage, and then also consulting services that we provided for government, commercial clients, and private industry. So yes, over the last 20 years, we've been steeped in real estate investment and other aspects of real estate. So it's not anything that's going to go away, you know, because of the pandemic. And I first want to say that, you know, that I'm very sensitive as being a socially conscious entrepreneur. I'm very sensitive to the fact that during this pandemic, you know, people potentially may lose their houses, and I don't want to minimize that. So my discussion today is really focused around the business of real estate, right? The business of acquiring assets, the business of repositioning assets, improving assets, and reselling assets. So I do believe, not just because of the pandemic, I think there was some pent-up inventory and some you know, foreclosures that was in the shadow even prior to this pandemic, that I think is just going to escalate the market conditions. And so I think the short answer to your question is I think we're going to see an increase in inventory in the market because of foreclosures and because of people who unfortunately have lost their jobs or have the inability to sustain their lifestyle. So yes, in the short term, I think the government will provide some relief to the banks and to the homeowners. But for the most part, I think that is going to be a short-term solution. I don't think that's sustainable, you know, long-term. And so I think that, as Warren Buffett says, you know, I think there will be some, you know, pardon my words, or his words, is there will be some blood in the street, which very simply means that the chaos is going to present some opportunities. And so in real estate, you always want to position yourself, you know, to buy low and to sell high. And I think that, you know, this precursor of the pandemic will create a lot of opportunities here in the near future for investment opportunities. But the short answer to what you're saying in terms of how, you know, our business practices have changed, you know, we probably for about the last year and a half, we've been building out a lot of softwares and cloud-based types of tools that we have been using. And so we have been basically operating in the cloud prior to this happening. And so there has been minimal disruption in our business. One of the greatest, you know, contributors to the disruption is not our ability to do business, but other partners and other people that we're doing business with, whether it's banks or institutions or buyers or sellers, their inability to continue to do business, you know, them not being online and not having a virtual presence. Has been some of the disruption that we've experienced.
Makes sense. So speaking of which, what would you say are some of the areas of real estate industry that you actually, your brokerage and maybe yourself personally focus on?
Oh, yeah, good question. So we run the gamut. We are full service. So that's residential, commercial, multifamily, mixed use, development. We touch, you know, all those aspects. Those are our four large buckets. But we also find ourselves in new construction, and that is representing the builder in some cases, you know, other cases representing the purchaser who's purchasing tracts of land, who has a desire to build townhouses or a mixed use or multifamily, or projects that we have an equity stake in, meaning that we actually have an ownership participation in that project. So those are the kind of the four lanes that we're in, and those often take us into other lanes as well, industrial and the like, but those are the four principal areas that we focus in.
Okay. And how many transactions would you say you've been involved in your entire real estate your entire real estate career?
Oh, wow. You know, you know, in over the last 20 years, I would say with what I personally have been involved in as well as my team, you know, it's well over 2 billion, I would say, square feet of leased properties or sold properties or developed properties. And that would probably, you know, equate in, you know, several hundred transactions, probably north of 300 transactions that I've personally been involved in.
Wow. That's a lot of different transactions. I'm sure you have a lot of different experiences in those, going with those different transactions.
Yeah, you know, I have. And, you know, what I tend to, tend to remind myself is each transaction is different. Each transaction is unique. And I learned this kind of early on in my career. As I mentioned, I was in the legal field for a number of years. And something that amazed me about lawyers is although they've been to school, and they have their professional license and their professional degrees. And the first thing that you notice when you go into a lawyer's office is you'll see a bookcase. And in most law firms of any size, they have libraries, right? And you would say to yourself is someone who has mastered their trade or their field, who is a subject matter expert, why does most of them say they're practicing law? I'm like, I don't get that. How are you that you are so proficient in? And what it reminded me is that it is practice, is that they go into every case first researching, understanding the law as it relates to this particular situation. And that's how I approach real estate, is every deal, every transaction, every contract is what is the uniqueness of this particular transaction. What are the leverage points, right? So whomever we're representing, how do we do that in the best way possible so that we can get to the end goal? And so I don't assume because I've been doing it this long or involved in these number of transactions that there aren't uniqueness within these transactions, and each one of them is different in that regard and in that respect.
Which brings me to my next question, which is, what would you say has been, I'm sure it's probably been more than one, but off the top of your head that comes to mind, what would you say has been your most difficult transaction?
Yeah, so I've had a number of them. I would answer the question this way, is one of my most transactions that I remember the most, one of the most rememberable ones, you know, it just reminds me of why I got into business, you know, which is real estate is a people business. And if you have a heart to serve and you're looking for common ground and you're looking to empower and to improve other people's lives before you're even focused on the profit, I think it's very easy to see, you know, how it can be a win-win situation, although most people would argue that if I win, then you lose. But you can create
right.
a mutual beneficial relationship within negotiation if you set that tone. And one of those situations was, you know, a property that a friend contacted me and said, hey, you know, my father, unfortunately, is becoming sick, falling ill. He has Alzheimer's, and I just have too much on me. You know, I'm his primary caregiver. I'm getting notices from the county. You know, they're fining me because of various things need to be done in his house. It's in a disrepair. He's not living in the house. However, you know, he's behind in the mortgage, and I think he refinanced a number of years ago. I'm not quite sure what that situation is like. They're threatening foreclosure. I'm at my wit's end. There's nothing, you know, I don't know what to do. And I said, okay, well, let me see if there's a way that I can help. You know, what is it that you'd like to do if possible? And she said, you know, I would just like for the phone calls to stop. I said, okay. I said, do you think there's equity in the house? Do you think that the house is worth more than what he owes on the mortgage? And she said, well, I doubt that very serious. I think if I was just able to break even and get out of this situation for him and stop the phone calls, and if there's a couple dollars to be made that I could help with his medical care, you know, that would be a bonus if there's a couple thousand dollars available. And I said, okay, well, let me see what I can do. So to make a long story short, you know, we got the proper paperwork in place, and I was able to start the discussion with the mortgage company, and I found some loopholes and some things that were as they legally was required to do. And so to make a long story short, we took a situation that they were just in destitute to where I was able to identify the error that was made. And the mortgage company that was calling her and harassing her, it turns out that they, because of the refinance, the new mortgage company had never recorded the deed. And so they were trying to enforce an instrument, in this case a deed, to say that he was behind based on the terms, but it wasn't recorded. And so when we asked them to, you know, produce on a preliminary title search that came up, so we asked them to produce the required mortgage documents to show that he had an obligation for the loan, and they were unable to do that. And so we went from this just terrible, horrific situation to me working that out with them, and we had an agreement in place prior to me being able to uncover that is in the event that we are successful, their interest still was to sell the property. And so we were able to then buy the property, give him, you know, several thousand. I mean, they were looking for $1,000. He ended up with, you know, closer to $100,000 that they weren't expecting. And it was a great story because we, you know, were able to rehab the property and improve the value of the property. And it was, again, a win-win for both sides. And that was one of the most memorable because it reminds me of why we got in the business. I didn't take on that situation for the reason of making money. It was really to help someone. And then genuinely we found a mutual win-win for both of us, you know, in the end.
Okay. No, find that win-win in the end is always, you know, from a conscious perspective, the desired goal. I know it's not the most easiest path, but it's definitely the desired outcome that as a conscious investor or developer that one should strive for. And I know that, you know, being in that mindset, you know, can require a lot of patience and emotional intelligence on your part in order to achieve that.
Yeah, and you know, King, I think at the end of the day, it's who you are. It's not what you do, right? And so it's hard to remind yourself as to what you're supposed to do if it's not who you are, right? And I'm not even saying that there's not opportunities for people to develop that who do not have those traits now. Absolutely, it's possible to develop that. But I think, you know, you get to the point where you're looking to serve instead of being served. And I think what you'll find is there's so much more joy, there's so much more peace, there's so much more fulfillment in giving and receiving. It really is.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. Now, for folks who maybe listen to this show that are considering getting started in real estate investing, maybe having gotten started, or maybe even some of the folks who are have gotten started, maybe paid for a course, and they're just getting started, they're newbies to the real estate industry, what was some of the advice you would give them about the real estate industry?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. It's a loaded question. I think one of the first things I would say is invest in yourself first. That's one of the first things that I would recommend is, you know, whether that's, you know, buying a course or whether that's buying a book or studying underneath of a mentor or finding a coach or someone who you can glean from. But I'd say the first step is invest in yourself. You need to understand the business that you're getting into. You need to understand the legal ramifications. You need to understand the financial ramifications. And be honest with yourself. You know, where are you in this stage of your life? You know, are you closer to retirement? Are you a young professional? Are you somewhere in the middle? You know, what is your potential growth in terms of financial growth as it relates to your career, your job, and all those things are considerations, because that's going to ultimately drive your investment strategy. You know, are you a buy and hold, or are you a buy and flip, right? Buy and hold meaning that you invest in the property for a long term and you're renting the property for a positive cash flow, so you're holding the property for a long-term investment. Or a flip would be a short-term investment, something that you're buying within 60, 90 days, 6 months at the longest. You're looking to buy, improve it, and put it back on the market. So I think one is investing in yourself. The second is studying. Be prepared before you get started, or what I say, before you get on the clock. Because once you're on the clock and you've invested your money, at this point you're pressing to try to get a return on the investment, to try to minimize your risk and your loss and your exposure. And so studying prior to getting into the market. And then understand that real estate is a team sport. So having your team, your lender, getting pre-approved before you start out as an investor, that is having someone to say that you qualify for a loan, whether that's a traditional loan with a bank or a mortgage company, or a loan with a hard money lender or even a private lender, is what is going to be the source of your funds. You know, do you have a real estate partner or real estate agent who can, you know, advise you on the market conditions and the trends and the neighborhoods that you should or should not be investing in based on your strategy, right? And having an investment strategy. And the final thing I would say, which is hard for new investors, but once you learn this, you'll never go back, which is be disciplined. You know when to say no. You know, every deal is not a good deal. But if you don't have a strategy and you don't have a process in which you approach these deals in terms of evaluating them, evaluating the risk and the return, then you're going to get into situations that may not end well for you. And so know when to say no. So for me, as I said, I've been doing this for 20 years, so I have a mathematical formula. So when I go into a house and I'm calculating, that's going to tell me what it is that I will offer. Has nothing to do with what the property is listed for, has nothing to do with the fair market value of the property is. None of those things are really important to me. What's important to me is what are my numbers, because my numbers is going to determine if I'm going to get the rate of return that I'm looking for within this property once I calculate all the risk. And if that doesn't line up for me, then it's a no deal.
You know, that's an important thing that you just said there. I think a lot of folks need to hear that, whether they're newbie or not, is having your mathematical number, as you say. You know, I'm a person that believes that my perspective is always know what your exit strategy is before you get into any property. You know what you're going to do with the property before you even write an offer on it. And I think a lot of people don't have that clarity, and so they either buy a property because someone else suggested it to them, or they're new to real estate investing. They join a real estate investment meetup group. Somebody emailed them an offer, you know, from some meetup group saying, here's a great deal. Here's what you can buy it for. Here's what you can put in it. And here's how much you can make on the after repair value if you sold it. and then people go out here and engage in real estate transactions with that type of strategy without having their own mathematical formula. I think that, you know, a lot of things that you said is important. That's why I wanted to ask that question, because, you know, really getting clarity to people that before you go out here and get started, research, build your business, understand the nature of the real estate industry, period. You know, economics, what drives the market, you know, understand some of the basic terminologies. Who are the players in the real estate industry? You know where, if you had to hire a contractor, where would you begin? You know, and engage with contractors or get a mentor. You know, all those things that you outlaid, I think, are important. But the gurus out here teach real estate investing from pay me this money, you can learn this in 6 weeks. I can teach you from not knowing anything at all about this business and this industry, and you can be making $60,000 in 6 weeks by buying my course. You know, I think a lot of people get caught up in that false belief. And unfortunately, people think that the business of real estate is different than any other business that you start, that you can get engaged in that business without having any prior knowledge or skills and just go out here and make money.
No, I agree with you 100%. You know, so what I say with that is, see, I wouldn't even necessarily make the assumption, I think some people do dangerously, is making the assumption because I want to or because I have a desire to or be better, this is my passion to invest in real estate, this is what I need to be doing. So I don't start with the assumption that it's affirmative that that's what you should be doing. So when someone asks me or say, hey, I have a desire to get into real estate, you know, would you mentor me? The first question I ask them, the very first question I ask them, is real estate investing for you? That's a very simple question. And they say, well, what do you mean? This is what I want to do. And I said, well, let me walk you through this, because there's about five things that you really need to consider before you get in real estate is, you know, and I have alluded to some of them earlier, is, you know, don't just assume that this is a business that you're going to do well in because you've done well in other businesses, because this is a legal business. It's a financial business, right? It's a people business. So so you're balancing all three of those things. And so you have to ask yourself the question is, you know, how much money do I even have to invest or can I invest? I alluded to this earlier based on your station in life. You know, where are you in your trajectory, right? So what do you have to invest? You know, second is what are your risk tolerance? Because, you know, when you sit down and talk with a financial advisor, the first thing the advisor wants to know is, you know, how early are you retiring? You know, what have you already set aside? And then he's going to say, if your goal is X in terms of income per month, then I need to work backwards and say, how do we build that nest egg so that you're able to do that? So depending on how close you are to retirement, he's going to make us some determination as it relates to your risk tolerance. Because if you're closer to retirement, he doesn't want to do things that are really risky because you could stand to lose a lot of money and you have a short-term goal. But if you have a long-term goal and you're young, then he says, okay, the market will take care of you in the long term. Even if you lose something early by being risky, you have time to make that up. You know, so that second question is, what is your risk tolerance? You know, the third question I would ask them is, do you have what it takes? At the end of the day, real estate is a contact sport. You know, you have to be in the fight. You know, you have to be determined. You have to have grit. It's not always going to go your way. It's not all there's not a script. And so you have to – it's an entrepreneurial business. So you got to get up every day. You got to have the drive and desire to want to make a difference each day. And that's not for everyone. And the fifth thing I would say is, how much time can you spend? Like, if you be realistic, there's only 24 hours in every day. If you're working for someone else in the daytime, which is God bless you if you have a day job, some of the best time to start another business is when you have dependable income. So I wouldn't say necessarily that now that I'm in investment real estate, I should walk away from my day job. No. I'm saying the total opposite. It's easier for you to qualify for loans and mortgages for real estate when you do have steady and dependable income. But what I am saying is, if you are working 8 hours a day, how many days does that, how much time does that leave you to be able to realistically invest in this business in terms of the time that it would require to build out this business? And okay, of course, you have your other community engagements, you have your family engagements, and take all that into account. And that's what I say when I say count the cost. When the first question is real estate investing for you? And so I think the answer to some of those questions will make it clear if this is something you should pursue, and then secondly, maybe what is the appropriate timeline for that to happen.
Absolutely. I think that's a great answer. I think you said a lot of things in there to give our listening audience something to really ponder on. You know, is real estate investing really for you? Which you broke down as far as some of the five key things that need to be mindful of. And I like how you said that people need to understand that real estate is a business that's a transactional business, I mean, financial business. It's a relationship business, you know, and it's a legal business. And so folks don't understand that, you know, they get into it because it's promised to be an easy thing to get into without understanding
yes.
those key components of it. You know, if you don't understand how to, if you're not a people person, you're not good at building relationships and talking to folks, then more likely you're not going to do good with the aspect of talking to homeowners or potential investors or property owners about their property. You know, even though you may be good on the financial side. So it's ways you can possibly collaborate with people. But I definitely think that you outlaid some key things that people should be mindful of. But, you know, you also, you know, with your answer, it led me to another question that I think that is definitely something I like to ask folks who I interview, people who've been in their field or their trade for years. And that is, what is one key thing that you've learned throughout the course of your career that if you knew, knowing what you know now, if you had to start over again, you would do differently based on, and I know it may be several things, you know, but I just
yes.
want to see again, what's that one key thing that you said, if I knew this when I first started, I would have behaved differently, or I would approach it differently. I would have done this differently.
Yeah, no, great question. So if I could, I just want to just jump back to the point that you just made, and then I'll be happy to answer the question that you have just presented. And the point that I want to make is, you earlier, you just profoundly said that once you answer those five questions for yourself, you may decide that maybe real estate investment is not for me right now, or that you need a team, or you participate differently. I guess that's the thing that I want to say is that oftentimes we look at real estate in a very linear, I'm the buyer, I purchase the property, I renovate the property, I hire the contractor, I take on all the risk, and then I have to wait 90 days, 6 months, 3 years, sometimes 20 years for the return on investment. But think about real estate as like investing, right? So you can buy stocks and bonds. You can buy stocks where you're just investing in one company. You can buy bonds where you're investing in the market. Or there's also mutual funds and other investment tools that allow you to minimize the risk because it's several people that's buying into this one particular company or industry or entity. And so I would say to that is think about real estate in that way, is that maybe once you answer these five questions, you might decide maybe I don't have the time or I'm not willing to make the investment required to get to where I want to be. But maybe partnering is an opportunity. Maybe investing in another investor, right, participating in equity in someone else's project or something else that's going on is also a wonderful way to minimize risk because it's not 100% you taking on all the risk, but it's spreading the risk out, which is what insurance companies do very well. And then you also can get the upside or the benefit in the real estate investing. So I just want to kind of tie that knot up that it's not an all or nothing. But in terms of, you know, my younger self, right, if I had something to say to my younger self, you know, what I would do different, I think, you know, I think it goes back to the Warren Buffett, you know, blood being in the street. You know, I've been fortunate enough to live through a couple bubbles, the tech bubble in the 90s, the real estate meltdown in the mid 2000s, and those were tremendous buying opportunities. But because of the chaos, you know, a lot of people sat on the sidelines, and a lot of those stocks and those real estates came back, and they came back in a very strong way. And the people who were properly positioned really got tremendous returns on the upside. And so I would say even in this pandemic, I think it has some of the same characteristics. And so if I was talking to my younger self, I would say, you know, buy and buy more often, you know, in terms of real estate, is not allowing the conditions of the market necessarily to dictate how much or how often I'm buying. You know, and I think that when it's low, money's cheaper and you can leverage. And when it's high, it's a lot difficult to get in. And so now I think here we're going to see very soon that there's going to be a lot of buying opportunities, but also it's going to come with some risk. And I would tell my younger self is to take on those risks, because real estate is a long-term play. I think when I was younger in my career, I looked at real estate more as like a day trader versus a long-term investor on the stock market. Day traders looking at the market every single day, every single hour, and they're making shifts and changes. But real estate often doesn't work that way. Real estate is a longer trajectory, and if you do the financial analysis over a long time, you'll find that real estate and insurance is really the fastest way to wealth consistently within this country. I think there was a study that was done, and forgive me, I'm escaping the university that did it, but they looked at over the last 300 years, they looked at wealth, people who had financial independence, and they found that 94% of them was involved in real estate in some aspect or another. So if you look at that over 300 years, you know, it's a long-term play, and that's what I would tell my younger self is don't pay attention to the day-to-day. Look at the long-term yield.
Absolutely. There's some invaluable, insightful information. You know, great answer to that question. You know, so now let's shift into being more specific about my favorite city, or the city that I decided to move to and set up shop in and begin to build in, and that's Baltimore City. So yes. I know that you've been from D.C., but you've made some real estate investment transactions in Baltimore City as a real estate broker and as an investor. And so my question is, you know, twofold. I want to ask your, with your broker hat on first, how do you see the Baltimore real estate market? And then I want to flip it and then say, as with your investor hat on, how do you see the Baltimore real estate market?
Yeah, so good question. So the Baltimore market from a real estate broker perspective, it's a tremendous opportunity. It really is. It has a lot of the things that you look for within real estate markets. And here's the thing, and it's like I said earlier, it's all about timing. There's a lot of opportunities in Baltimore now, to be quite honest with you, that I don't foresee them being there 10 years from now, right? Meaning that, again, buying low and selling high is, I think it would be a lot more difficult to get the return on investment 5 to 10 years from now that traditionally you might be able to get right now, being able to ride the market. So if I was a broker representing investors, I would say, you know, Baltimore is a great market to invest in. From the investor perspective, you know, we're committed to Baltimore. We're looking for projects in Baltimore. We're looking for opportunities to make a difference and to impact, you know, some of the communities in Baltimore. So, yeah, we're actively engaged and we're all in terms of investing in Baltimore.
And what do you see Baltimore's city's commercial real estate compared to the boom that you saw? I'm sorry, I want to finish. Before you I mean, you've experienced, you've been a part of some commercial development projects in D.C., and I just wanted to see what your thoughts on Baltimore City's commercial real estate area.
Yep. So I think Baltimore has tremendous opportunity. I think what we saw in Washington, D.C., if we're looking at the early 2000s, right, which is when I started looking at investing in D.C., there were some challenges infrastructure-wise, and there was major investment that came in from the city, from D.C. government. At that time, you know, they were under the control board, and D.C. couldn't – they the citizens of D.C. didn't even run their own government, if you remember that. They were under control Bremer, and then later Anthony Williams came in, and he worked on the control board with Bremer. He was from the West Coast, California, but then later he became mayor, and he had the vision that if he was to bring fiber optics into D.C. and allow D.C. to become connected, then that would allow the businesses to follow because it will be easier to do business once that infrastructure was in place. And so the government made a major investment in the infrastructure. And I kind of see the same thing in Baltimore. I see developers usually do not want their money to be the first money in. So when you see infrastructure improvements, developers tend to follow suit, because when developers come, it will then bring jobs and some of the other social and economic impact things that the government wants to see. But I think I think the next 2 years is critical. You know, they're about to go under new leadership as it relates to the mayor. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for Baltimore to do some of the things that D.C. did, which would make investing in Baltimore, it could accelerate people's interest in investing in Baltimore. Let me say that.
Now, what would you say from your experience should be some of the things that you would tell folks to be cautious of if they're new to Baltimore City? In other words, they're investors. They may have investment experience in other areas, either D.C., New York, Virginia, California, what have you, but they haven't never invested in the Baltimore City. What would you tell that investor to be cautious of?
Yeah, I think, again, it goes back to real estate being a team sport. I think you have to get boots on the ground. You have to get intel with people that know the communities, that know the neighborhoods, that know the trends. And I think it's very from the outside looking in. If you're not immersed in those neighborhoods, I think it's very difficult to understand where things are going. So to that point, I would say Baltimore investing is really block by block. It really is. It's really difficult to look at a map and say, like you do in other cities, and say, okay, well, this property here, you know, sold for X, and this is, you know, three blocks away, or this is four blocks away, and it's inside, quote unquote, the same neighborhood, right? The reality is in Baltimore, that may not be the case, right, that you really need to look block by block. Not only block by block, you need to be looking, like, you know, house by house, because a lot of people from the outside don't understand. If you come in to invest in Baltimore and you buy a property and you want to renovate it, it may be difficult to get a loan if there's a vacant or an abandoned property right next door. So lenders are looking to see how many vacant and abandoned properties are on a given block or on a given street or in a given neighborhood, and they're making determinations about lending based on those dynamics. And so that's something that you really need local participation to really fully understand that, if not from Baltimore City. But, again, I think it creates opportunities as well. So if that is the case, maybe I went in, maybe my idea previously was buying one property, but maybe now I want to buy multiple properties on the same block, because then I have a better chance of controlling my outcome, or inviting other investors or developers, right, to come in, and together we then start to develop block by block, so that, again, we're minimizing the risk. and maximizing the return on investment, because as it relates to comps and comparables and all those things are going to drive the conversation when we talk about return on investment, where when we do the appraisal, they're comparing it to like properties. And so the more I can create those like property scenarios within that same block, within that same community, then the greater the return will be on my investment. And that will help the city. It will help other investors. It will help communities as well. So it definitely, again, would create that win-win that we talked about earlier.
You know, and you just that's a perfect segue into my next question, which is, because you kind of definitely gave an expanded answer beyond what I perceive people who are just investors think. And that leads me to my question of, what do you see as being the difference between being a real estate investor and a real estate developer? Because a lot of times folks try to use those as synonyms of each other, and I see those being two totally different definitions. So I just kind of want to get your definition of it and how you see that answer.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, in some cases they can be the same, but in most cases they're not. It's rarely the same. You're rarely wearing the same hat. And my distinction is, a developer is someone that's looking at the overall, the big picture. They're not looking at necessarily a particular property or a particular parcel, but they're looking at what is the bigger picture, right? What are the greater needs within this community, and how is this project going to help address those needs? So as a developer, it's more likely that I'm looking at, say, for instance, the master plan. And so most communities, most cities, they have a master plan, and these master plans tend to go out 10, 20, 30 years. And so they're looking at the zoning, they're looking at all the things that would impact the value and the quality of life of the residents. And so the developer then is bringing projects that's in line, that's harmonious with what the community or the elected officials or even the stakeholders are looking for within the community, right? And investors, I think, could be doing the same thing, but for the most part, when we're talking about real estate investors, in this case, they're probably looking property by property, right? So they'll be looking to buy this property, you know, whether it's a multifamily apartment building, or they're looking to buy a single property that may be renovation and sell or buy and hold. But they are concerned with the overall real estate conditions of the market, but not necessarily the same perspective that the developer is looking at. The developer is looking in a more global sense. And what you'll see most often is developers will go into a certain neighborhood or community and start with one project. And you'll see that same developer do multiple projects within that same community. And, well, why is that the case? Well, it's because they had a global vision for the community when they went in. They didn't go in necessarily focused on one project. They went in with a global vision, and that was just the project that they started with. Whereas an investor very easily will bounce between neighborhoods based on individual properties, not necessarily the master plan for that neighborhood.
Mm. I like that answer. I think that's a clear and concise definition. Now, here's a question I get from a lot of folks who are interested in getting started in real estate investing or maybe even have a year or two under their belt. They'll say things like, well, I'm going to get my real estate license. Now, I say, why are you going to get your real estate license?
Yeah.
And they'll say, because I want access to MRIS, you know, MLS system. So my question for you as a broker and as a real estate investor, how do you answer that question for folks who are investors who are thinking about getting their license just to get access to the MLS system as opposed to maybe engage in actual brokerage transactions? What would your advice be to those individuals?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And to be honest with you, it is extremely expensive to maintain and getting even more expensive. to maintain a professional license in general, but real estate particularly, because there's so many different fees and associations and things that we have to participate in because it is a professional license, and some of them, you know, based on regulatory that's required that we participate in, that's not a choice. So I would say it's an expensive proposition if you're just getting your license just to get access to the database, because to be perfectly honest with you, a lot of that information has now become public, right? So the value proposition previously for a real estate professional was that we had something the public didn't have, which is access to properties. In a lot of, whether you were talking about Zillow or you were talking about a lot of the other, you know, databases that's out there, it provides some of that same information. So now for realtors to be able to distinguish themselves, it's really about their knowledge, their market knowledge, what they know about particular neighborhoods. And so they can be a tremendous asset to investors, which is why I would have the investor reconsider if that's the only reason why they're getting licensed. I think the other thing they'd have to think about is liability. Is if you are a real estate professional and you're to a sales contract, your requirements in terms of disclosure, in terms of what is required for you to share with the seller, is at a much greater level than if you were just an investor, right? Because the jurisdiction that you're licensed in, the licensing body's job is to protect the public from you, because it's understood that real estate licensees and brokers have more information as it relates to the market, real estate pricing, and all those things, negotiation, more than the average person. So if you're going into a real estate transaction, it's assumed that this person has a greater level of influence in the transaction because of their education or licensing. So you have to keep that in mind in terms of disclosure. It's at a much greater level by being a licensee than if you were just an investor.
Makes sense. You know, we're getting near the top of the hour, and I had a lot more questions, so I'm definitely going to have you back. And with your perspective, I think it's very timely that people need to understand with this new direction that the roundtable wants to go in as far as putting out information out there so folks can really understand how to research real estate in Baltimore City, how to analyze properties, how to build connections with the communities, how to approach real estate investing as a developer. And I think that understanding, as you mentioned, the master plan, the impact that your housing or your choice with its investment as an investor is going to have on a greater community, instead of you just trying to say, I'm going to buy a house, flip it, and put a renter in it and try to cash flow. You know, going beyond that, if you have that kind of perspective, you come to Baltimore City, you're going to have a much better chance of being successful as opposed to just thinking you're going to buy a house because you saw that on HGTV and you want to follow that kind of model because that looks like that was exciting to you and that looked easy to you based on how TV made it look. So I definitely want to get your input and develop some classes and some courses, some mentorship, and just really helping, you know, build out that conscious mindset as it relates to real estate investing here in Baltimore City. So one of the last things I want to do is give you the opportunity in the next 90 seconds is to kind of lay out your contact information. So if any of our listening audience has any questions, how they can connect with you, follow up with you, or get in contact with you.
Oh, yeah, awesome. So, yeah, so the website is thevelocitygroupllc.com. You can find me there. You can communicate, send me emails through there. I'm also on LinkedIn, or you can email me directly. That's andre.yourealtor@gmail.com. That's andre@gmail.com. That's my personal email box, and I do respond to emails. As I said earlier, we're actively engaged in the business. We're looking for investors to represent, as well as if you have land that you want to be developed. We're happy to have a conversation with you to tell you what the steps are that's required for that to happen. If you have property that you need to sell right away, we are a cash buyer and in most cases can settle in 7 to 10 days. But most importantly, just know that we're a resource. If you only have a question about a transaction that you're already in and you just need some insight or perspective, you know, we have those conversations all the time. So feel free to reach out to us. You can reach me directly on my cell number, which is 202-246-0197.
All right, and thank you, Mr. Smith. We appreciate your time for getting on the King Street Show and look forward to continuing to having more discussions with you as we go forth. And you stay safe and sound and, you know, continue to practice all the CDC requirements or recommendations.
Absolutely. Thank you, King.
Have a blessed and productive day.
Thank you, brother. You too.
Bye.
King Street, D.C. Metropolitan News.